Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com. Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today we continue our series, Moving Forward in a Dark Time, Guidance from William Pierce. This program is part two of that series. These are the words of the founder of the National Alliance and of the philosophy/religion that is the spiritual basis of all of the Alliance's work, including this radio program. That spiritual basis is cosmotheism. It is a beacon of light, the only true spiritual beacon. All conventional religions and conventional ideologies have failed. In these dark times, when the very existence of our race is threatened, when properly understood, cosmotheism will take your breath away and make you see the insane folly of the established popular religions of our times. These are the words of William Pierce. Listen. It doesn't do much good to say that if we could reach millions more people each month with National Vanguard, and if 500 or 1,000 people came to each of our meetings, then the types of things we are doing now would be sufficient for us to become a truly viable organization. The fact is that we have certain resources now, and we are using all of them, doing certain things, and we are not getting results fast enough. So, we have to use those resources in some other ways instead. Ways that will allow our resources to increase faster than they are increasing now, so that one day we can reach those millions more people each month with exposures and condemnations of the enemy and warnings for our people. And so we can launch sustained campaigns of direct action which can be maintained in the face of all the repressive power the enemy can bring to bear against us. So, more teaching and preaching and developing our resources for recruiting. A diversion of a part of our present resources from exposures and warnings to longer range goals. A raising of our sights. Why should this be more successful than what we are doing now? The answer is, because of what the American people we're trying to reach are like. Because of the reactions we have observed over and over again to what we are doing now. Aside from the liberals and the conservatives, that is, people who either through wrongheadedness or ignorance don't agree with us, the two most common negative reactions we encounter are fear and lethargy, or lack of incentive. Let's consider fear first. We find two kinds of fear. One kind is unreasoning fear many people have, that if they become affiliated with us in some way, even to the extent of writing to us or subscribing to our monthly printed National Alliance Bulletin, the government or the Jews or the blacks will find out about it and get back at them in some way. Some people imagine that blacks in the postal service will notice that they are receiving our bulletin in the mail and will assault them or say something hostile to them and embarrass them. Some imagine that the Jews will find out about them and will do something to damage their business or their credit rating or will somehow get them fired from their jobs. Others have a really pathological fear of the FBI. They are terrified by the thought that the FBI will put them on some sort of enemies list. To those of us who understand a little better the way things actually work, such fears seem laughable and contemptible. We may be inclined to say that we don't need such paranoids and cowards. But it is a fact that a very large portion of the population, which otherwise agrees with us, is afflicted by such fear, and it seriously limits our recruiting. The thing which makes me feel there is some hope for recruiting many of these frightened people and getting some useful participation out of them is the memory of my own feelings when I first published something critical of the system. I was afraid then. I was really worried that I might be assaulted on the streets by gangsters hired by the Jews, and that hostile blacks might try to break into my home and harm my family. I soon found out how foolish my fears were. That doesn't mean, of course, that there are no dangers in what we are doing. But the dangers are not what most people imagine them to be. And I am sure that if we could make the initial step of becoming affiliated with us less frightening, many more people will be able to take the initial step and then later overcome their fears and go much further with us. There is also another kind of fear people have, and that is a fear of doing something or being associated with something unpopular, something which will bring the disapproval of their friends or neighbors or co-workers. It's a manifestation of herd instinct. Now, the Jews have very wisely blackened in the public mind, everything in which we believe. They have attempted to protect themselves by making any resistance to them, any white efforts at self-defense, seem disreputable. The average American is more terrified of being considered a racist, even if he is one, and most people are, than he is of being assaulted on the street or arrested by the FBI. Again, just as with the other type of fear, we may be inclined to hold such people in contempt and to say that any worthwhile person should have the courage of his convictions. But in fact, most Americans who agree with us do not have the courage of their convictions, and it doesn't do us any more good to lament that fact than it does to lament the fact that people are so blind as not to see what the Jews are up to, or so self-centered and materialistic as not to care. That's the way people are, and we can't change it until we can provide a healthier spiritual environment for them. There are still people left in this country who have not spooked themselves with exaggerated fears of black mailmen or the FBI, and who are not afraid of being called a racist. We want and need such people. But I believe experience is showing us that there just aren't enough such people. We need others, too. And if we are to recruit them, we must try to find ways to help them overcome their fears. There is no perfect solution to this problem, I am sure. There will always be people too timid to join us, no matter how much care we take to avoid spooking them. And we will always be too disreputable for some people, no matter how we try to change our public image. But I believe that downplaying the negative a bit and accentuating the positive can help our recruiting a great deal. I am not talking about compromising our ideals in any way. I am not talking about ceasing to expose and condemn the Jews and those of our own race who collaborate with them. But I am talking about making it a little easier for those to join us who are not quite as strong or as brave as we would like. And that will mean shifting of emphasis. Some of the things which in the past have been explicit in our publications about physical action, about racial matters and the Jews, will have to be left implicit in the material intended for public distribution. Now, besides fear, the other problem I mentioned, which we have to deal with if we are to grow faster, is lack of motivation. Both among the public and among our own members, we have a severe problem of inactivity, of people who are not afraid to come to meetings or to spread our flyers or our URLs or to recruit other people, but who don't do those things because they would rather watch TV. We have not succeeded to the extent we should have in making these people want to participate. And for nearly everyone, that's the key. They have to want to do something or they won't do it. A sense of duty just isn't sufficient except for a very few, too few. Remember, we're dealing mostly with the permissive me generation. This doesn't mean we need a fun and games approach to our revolution. It's still going to be hard work and sacrifice, and there's no way of changing that. But we can do a better job of motivating people to do their duty. And I believe there are two ways we can increase motivation. One way is through an increased understanding of our long-range goals. That is, through a raised state of consciousness, both among our own people and those we are trying to recruit. The other way is to try harder to have an organization which fills a real need in people's lives. The first way means more education and more consciousness raising, with a stress on the message in our affirmation. It means a bigger effort to make potential recruits fully aware that we are trying to do much more than solve a number of acute social and racial problems now confronting America, that our work is not over when the last Jew and the last Shabbos Goy have been taken care of, but that it will really be just beginning then, that the problems of today are merely an initial roadblock which must be cleared away so that we can begin a program of building and climbing that will go on and on for generation after generation. And again, that means a shifting of emphasis away from the terrible and disgusting things that are going on now, which we want to stop, to the new things that we want to begin doing in a cleansed America and in a cleansed world. The second way means providing an opportunity for a sense of community in the lives of those who now have none, who feel isolated and alone in a hostile world because their outlook is similar to ours. It means providing a hope of fulfillment, a hope of doing something worthwhile, something with eternal meaning and significance for those who have the terrible knowledge that their lives now are without meaning or significance and are thus being wasted. And again, that means a shift of emphasis from short-range things to long-range things. It means stressing the spiritual basis of our organization, even at the expense of temporarily neglecting some of the current problems in the world around us. It is too often the case now, I believe, that we try to recruit someone on the basis of working with us to halt the takeover of our schools by black savages or to free our national news networks from Jewish control. And the prospective recruit agrees with us that it would be nice to do these things. But he looks at us, a few hundred people, with no apparent resources beyond a monthly publication, a few houses and buildings, and a few websites. And he looks at the enemy's enormous resources, and he shakes his head and says to himself, "No way." He just can't work up any enthusiasm or motivation for trying to do something he doesn't believe can be done. It's just not worth the trouble, the embarrassment, the risk, the expense. So he stays in front of his TV set. If instead that prospective recruit saw in us a spiritually compatible community, which he might join, a group of kindred spirits whose beliefs and teaching he found exciting and soul-satisfying in themselves, then he might very well leave his television and participate with us in spreading our message because he wanted to, because he found it rewarding in itself. And so might many others also. And then, what had seemed impossible before will have become possible, because we will have become much more than a few hundred, and our resources will have become much greater than the few publications and homes and offices we have today. We will publish, as soon as we possibly can, a book citing a clear and fairly complete exposition of our philosophy and our long-term goals, that is, of the spiritual basis of our existence. But whatever we do will remain implicit in and derived from the one eternal truth contained in our affirmation. We will merely be trying new ways of presenting that truth, emphasizing new aspects of it, drawing new conclusions from it. And whatever we do will depend upon the full and wholehearted participation of all those listening to my words today, and all our brothers and sisters in spirit and blood across the continents where our people live, who also receive this message.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the Alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine, a place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of woman who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions. And in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every National Socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National Socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker. Nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now let me, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Send them, let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you, we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces. They just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.